This week on Making Contact.
You know, we're moving the fight out to the perimeter, stopping the storm surge, not allowing it to come back into the heart of the city like we saw during Katrina, and fighting it out here at Lake Bourne and in the Gulf.
We've all seen how high water devastated New Orleans. But another historic jewel, Venice, Italy, is also struggling to plan for sea level rise.
They could raise ground level by about 20 or 30 centimeters. If the minimum for sea level rise for the Venice region is actually 50 centimeters, it might not be worth the effort.
On this edition, producer Zoe Sullivan takes us to both Venice and New Orleans to look at some creative solutions and what other coastal cities might do as the effects of climate change set in. I'm Andrew Stelzer, and this is Making Contact, a program connecting people, vital ideas, and important information.
And missing near Baton Rouge, somewhere on the river bottom in Mississippi mud, barge MTC-602. Laden with 600 tons of deadly liquid chlorine.
In 1965, Hurricane Betsy overwhelmed New Orleans' pump system, flooding more than 150,000 homes and forcing families to the rooftops for safety. 1 year later, Venice swam under its highest tide levels ever, almost 6.5 feet above the norm. Parts of Venice were covered by over 13 feet of water. One of the city's islands was completely submerged for only the second time in its 1,000-year history. 3,000 people were evacuated from Venice, and one ship sank when another collided with it. In both cities, those high water levels wreaked havoc, bursting the oil tanks used to heat homes and dumping oil and other toxins into the water. Now, as sea levels rise around the world and severe weather systems become more common, Venice and New Orleans are dealing with the challenges of being located on the margins between land and sea.
We're going to build that industrial canal, that tunnel under the industrial canal. We're now making preparations. It'll be so far advanced. Before long goes out of us, there'll be no way for anybody to prevent it being built. Don't you doubt that. It's going to be built.
As governor of Louisiana for much of the 1950s, Earl Long oversaw the construction of a shipping canal that decades later would act like a funnel during Hurricane Katrina, directing water inland towards New Orleans. In Venice, a shipping canal was dredged through the lagoon during the 1960s, providing a path to the enormous chemical plants on the mainland, just like the ones lining the Mississippi between New Orleans and Baton Rouge. While the Mississippi River Gulf Outlet, or Mr. Go, acted like a funnel during Katrina, the Canale dei Petroli in Venice has disrupted the lagoon's ecosystem, creating the conditions for bigger variations in tidal levels and consequently more flooding. Pino Sartori grew up on the edge of Venice's lagoon where his family has lived for generations. Now he works as a biologist for the Veneto region, and he volunteers to help preserve a section of the marsh surrounding the lagoon.
Molti dei nostri soci, infatti, sono...
Many of our members have a small traditional boat, and they visit the lagoon for leisure, like fishing. Our job is to maintain the history of these places and to deliver it to our children.
But the task of delivering the marsh to the next generation is becoming harder.
Ci sono testimonianze nei nostri genitori, nei nostri nonni.
There are stories from our parents or our grandparents that it was possible to cross the marshes, with boots obviously, or with the right setup, like a small boat, and you could reach the Lido without ever getting into a large open stretch of water. So the lagoon mostly consisted of marshes. Then, because of climate phenomena and the intense human intervention in the lagoon, it's been transforming into a bay.
La laguna si sta trasformando in un braccio di mare.
Seeing changes like those Sartori describes, New Orleans native and coastal scientist Scott Eustace resents the way the Louisiana coast has been decimated.
The oil and gas industry owes a huge debt to Louisiana and its coastal communities, and it's a debt that they do not and will not recognize. Right now, we're covered in oil from BP, and we're going to be covered in that oil for a decade, and our future is threatened by sea level rise, aggravated by their fossil fuel emissions.
New Orleans has always been a port city. early residents built levee walls to protect industry and farms, to prevent floods and to keep the river flowing into the Gulf of Mexico. But the walls also prevent sediment carried by the river from reaching the Mississippi River Delta and building new land. In both New Orleans and Venice, the pursuit of industrial development led city planners and engineers to manipulate the environment, creating consequences, big and small, for the city's residents. In Venice's Canareggio district, near the train station, pedestrians donning tall rubber boots use passerelle, or raised wooden walkways, to get around the city when the lagoon overtops its banks. 2010 set high water records for Venice, with more than 200 days of flooding, nearly 3 feet or more, and 24 straight days of water at this level from mid-November to early December. The water rose right up to the doors of the buildings, and storekeepers put up small floodgates to keep the water out of their stores. Gabriele Zanaro owns a blown glass and souvenir shop. As he sticks putty into the edges of the gate to make it as impermeable as possible, Zanaro says the floods take a toll on his business.
I wouldn't know how to calculate the cost, but one high tide basically takes away a day of work, so it's expensive.
Since high tide levels are announced with warning sirens, Zanaro is able to put all his merchandise up on shelves to protect it. But the shop is still filled with mud and debris that he's forced to clean, taking time away from his business.
Yeah, it's basically every other day. There are 365 days. The exception is the summer, when for now at least we're all right.
As for the city helping flood-affected businesses, Zanaro says he has little recourse and few options.
You just have to deal with it. They don't give you anything because reimbursements only come when there is more than 1.50 meters. But 1.50 meters is exceptional. And the compensation they do give you is ridiculous, keeping in mind it takes away a day of work.
Yet Venice is still a mecca for tourists, with roughly 17 million visitors a year. And the cruise industry has made the city one of its frequent ports of call. Jane DeMosto is a consultant with Venice in Peril, a British organization created in the wake of the 1966 flood to preserve the city.
From a tourism point of view, the mayor of Venice and the port authority, they insist that the cruise ship operators won't come to Venice if they can't bring their huge, belching, gross cruise ships, right through Venice, in front of Piazza San Marco.
The wakes from these and other big ships eat away at the bottom of the lagoon and the marshes. This process is making the lagoon deeper and smoother, like a bowl, which allows for larger shifts in tidal levels. Louisiana has also been flooding forever, a natural consequence of being in a river delta. With larger human settlements and more infrastructure, though, the impact of floods and levee failures has become catastrophic. Jody and Liz Sigler live in New Orleans and own a fish camp on Grand Isle, one of Louisiana's barrier islands that protects the mainland from Gulf storms. Since the couple purchased their cabin in 2002, they've seen changes to other camps in the area.
I mean, through the years, you would see a couple of camps like right off of that highway, and you were kind of like, man, how long has that been there? And
it's,
and you could see the water just coming over the driveways.
It's eroded you can tell it's definitely some of it's eroded, but they built it back up a little bit. But I think it's more of it's now missing than when we bought the camp.
While the Siglers enjoy the coast as a getaway spot, for others, these issues are a regular part of life. Tim Kerner is the mayor of Jean Lafitte, Louisiana, a small town tucked in next to the intracoastal waterway between New Orleans and the Gulf of Mexico.
Well, we're battling for existence. It goes back, last 30, 40 years, the oil companies coming in and digging canals all through the marshlands and making it where the water comes on us now so fast that even winds blowing from the south, it'll raise the tide and flood this area. So it's getting very bad.
When storm surges hit the coast near Jean Lafitte, water levels can rise by 8 feet. The oil industry's canals contribute to this, but so does the intracoastal waterway that was built to facilitate shipping. Scott Eustace is the coastal wetland specialist at the Gulf Restoration Network. He says the problem goes beyond the canals that were cut.
We have a large subsidence problem in coastal Louisiana. We're sinking as the sea level is rising. And the oil industry is in denial about their role in this. But when there are no rocks in Louisiana, even for miles and miles down. So when you suck oil out of the ground, the marsh sinks.
But big oil isn't the only culprit in Louisiana. Dams further up the Mississippi's tributary system have slashed the amount of sediment that reaches the delta. River Basin expert John Barry is the author of Rising Tide, a history of the Great Mississippi River Flood of 1927.
All the land in the river's floodplain was actually built by the deposit of sediment in the Mississippi River. And it used to deliver 400 million tons of sediment a year to the Gulf of Mexico. It now only delivers about 125 million tons of sediment. There are tens of thousands of dams on the entire Mississippi River system, which stretches from New York State to the Rocky Mountains. But of those tens of thousands of dams, there are actually six on the upper Missouri River in Montana, North Dakota, and South Dakota that hold back 150 million tons of sediment a year. People in Montana don't realize that those dams up there directly harm this part of the country. And those dams were built for hydroelectric power, flood protection, and irrigation. So their benefits directly damage the entire Gulf Coast.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information or for CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. Because of listeners like you, this show is distributed for free to radio stations in the U.S., Canada, and South Africa. To find out how to support us, download shows, or get our podcasts, go to radioproject.org. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Our handle is making_contact. We now return to a documentary by producer Zoe Sullivan on how the cities of Venice and New Orleans are coping with sea level rise and increased flooding and how they're planning for the future.
Severe weather cycles in summer and winter, hurricanes, tornadoes, and blizzards, along with greater temperature extremes, are becoming the new normal. As a result, more cities, on and off the coasts, are facing increased threats of flooding and are looking for ways to cope. Louisiana, with its long experience with floods, has the potential to pioneer solutions that can help cities across the U.S. and around the world. Part of what's creating the conditions for this innovation, though, is the rapid loss of the wetlands that buffer human habitats from Gulf storms. Greg Miller heads the Army Corps of Engineers Coastal Restoration Branch.
Ecologically, we're losing a very important and rare habitat. Economically, these areas provide a lot of the nation's fisheries. They serve as a passageway for commerce that comes in by means of ship transport in and out of the coastal areas. And it's a very important energy sector for the nation's domestic production of oil and natural gas. And so the loss of wetlands in this area has a threat to those industries because the wetlands buffer the developed areas along the coast from the Gulf of Mexico.
And Louisianans aren't just concerned about their livelihoods disappearing with the coastline. They worry about losing the unique culture that was nurtured among the reeds. Emily Clark teaches history at Tulane University. For her, the wetland landscapes inspire a particular attitude towards life.
And so when you live in that kind of environment that's always under threat, I think you find daily life precious. There's also a certain kind of camaraderie that grows up in a culture. You always know that this is a possibility. You joke about it. You sort of mess around with death in order to survive in this kind of a fragile environment.
In New Orleans, this is part of the spirit that gave birth to jazz, and it's one of the things that allows people to keep moving forward in the wake of disaster. But some in Louisiana say the situation is becoming dire. David Wagoner runs an architecture firm in New Orleans.
If we don't restore our relationship to nature, if we don't restore our relationship to Mother Earth, really, I mean, we continue this way of wasting and trashing, and where next? Where are we going to go?
Like Louisiana, Venice is fighting to survive as acque alte, or high water episodes, become more frequent and cause more damage. British charity Venice in Peril warns that because of increased flooding, the city's historic buildings are decaying more rapidly. Jane DeMosto lives in an old building that would have housed a merchant family like that of Marco Polo, a building like so many now threatened by water.
More and more frequently, for longer and longer hours, water level comes above the kind of impermeable foundations of the buildings in Venice, and that's causing accelerated degradation of the urban fabric. You know, the brickwork crumbles, the plaster rendering on the facade of the buildings is coming off and needs to be continuously repaired and restored.
Environmentalists like Pino Sartori are also concerned about the cleansing function that the marsh has traditionally performed for the city. Until recently, the city's sewage was simply dumped into the canals, which fed it to the lagoon's flora and fauna.
The entire city of Venice lives in an equilibrium of the tide with its context, and it needs to dispose of its urban waste. These places are like a person's kidneys. They are the places where purification happens, in addition to through the tide. So the preservation of these places is directly linked to protecting the city's health. Even more now if the outlets are closed with high tides. This year there are over 100 high tides. So if the lagoon is closed for more than 100 days, there's a risk that this will turn into a sewer.
Rischia di trasformarsi in una fognatura.
Sewer systems are being built, but some residents complain that they aren't being constructed properly, and it's debatable whether the pace at which they're being installed will be enough to respond to the city's needs. Cristiano Gasparetto has been active in the debates over how to maintain the city. He says that the rise in costs associated with living in Venice has forced roughly two-thirds of the city's population to move elsewhere, particularly lower-income Venetians. For Gasparetto, Venice's rise as a tourism mecca is partially responsible.
So this kind of tourism has destructive power. It destroys the city. It empties it of residents.
And a loss of regular residents, Gasparetto says, has implications for the city's symbiosis with the lagoon.
Following this trend, the city will be restored, possibly badly, but it will become a chrysalis, not a living city. And only a living city can govern a living lagoon, because there is a reciprocal relationship.
High water warning sirens ring more and more often now, alerting residents that the tide will be high enough to flood some parts of the city. In an effort to respond to the problem, the city government began work in 2003 on something called MOSE, a movable seawall designed to keep very high tides from causing floods. So far, more than $4 billion has been spent, and the cost is projected to double. Budgetary issues are drying up government resources, and it seems unlikely that MOSE will be completed by its 2014 target. Giovanni Cecconi is the chief engineer for Consorzio Venezia Nuova, which is supervising all aspects of the work on MOSE. He refutes critics who say the barrier will have a negative impact.
We can close the lagoon and save the city for a few hours' time, three or four times a year when necessary, without any impact on the ecosystem.
But with high water days during almost two-thirds of 2010, some question whether Cecconi's three or four times a year scenario is realistic. And scientists are busy looking for other potential solutions to the city's flooding problem. Jane DeMosto says one idea being floated involves trying to boost the city, literally, so that it sits at a higher level than it does now.
By pumping seawater into the gas extraction wells in the upper Adriatic, they think that they could raise ground level by about 20 or 30 centimetres, which would be an interesting way of buying time for Venice and the surrounding hinterland.
According to DeMosto, one problem with this proposal is that if the layer of mud that should act as a ceiling for this water is fractured, the water will simply seep through, and the city will stay at its current level. But that's not the only issue affecting the feasibility of this plan.
If the minimum for sea level rise for the Venice region is actually 50 centimeters by the year 2100, then it might not be worth the effort.
The MOSE project was designed to hold back an increase of up to 60 centimeters in sea level. But if the sea level rises to the level D'Amosto suggests, it would fundamentally alter the entire area, submerging some coastal zones completely. In Louisiana, efforts are also being made on several fronts to deal with the changing environment so that humans can continue to inhabit it.
You know, we're moving the fight out to the perimeter.
Paul Floro is a consultant with the Army Corps of Engineers.
Stopping the storm surge, not allowing it to come back into the heart of the city like we saw during Katrina, and fighting it out here at Lake Bourne and in the Gulf.
Floro spoke at the Bayou Benvenue Gate, a massive structure that was built by the Corps to stop rushes of water pushed by hurricanes. This is just one of many barriers that the Corps has built in the New Orleans area. The total hurricane and risk reduction system package is worth more than $14 billion. But as with MOSE in Italy, critics say Louisiana's project is not going to be effective. Author and river basin expert John Barry is one of them.
I'm pretty confident that the system will do what it's supposed to do. The real problem is that what it's supposed to do is not very much. And it's supposed to protect against a storm with a 1% chance of arriving in any given year. And it's so-called 100-year storm, which gives people a false sense of security.
Barry says that the probability of a 100-year storm is actually much greater than 1 out of 100. And this discrepancy leads to planning decisions with problematic underlying assumptions that can cause further environmental damage and worsen the spiral. What's more, Barry says, enormous walls aren't the only way to protect Louisianans.
You know, there are three legs to the stool. The first is rebuilding the outer barrier, coastal marsh and so forth, which breaks down the wave energy. The second leg is, of course, the levees and flood walls that hold water out. The third leg, and which practically nobody's paid any attention to, is in, you know, what happens inside the city. And that's wholly within, you know, that's not the federal government. That's wholly within the purview of the city.
Although subsidies were offered to residents to elevate their homes following Hurricane Katrina, those funds were limited, and not everyone was able to take advantage of them. But even so, the city hasn't issued new building codes, which would force property owners to raise their structures. One of the more radical proposals involves allowing the Mississippi River to change its course. While it may represent a huge shift for area residents, it reflects what nature would do if left to itself. Denise Reed teaches coastal ecology at the University of New Orleans.
And the best thing we can do is re-divert the river. The best thing we can do is get the water and the sediment out of the river during a flood and get it out into the coast to start building land. We can't catch it in any other way except with the natural way that sediment gets captured in a delta. We can't put a big piece of cheesecloth across the river and catch it. The way that nature builds deltas is with high water during floods. That is the process that we need to replicate in other areas.
Reed is one scientist who espouses managing the river in a way that allows it to build up land by flooding. Some steps are being taken in this direction, but coastal experts estimate that under the current plans, it'll take 30 years before the delta will stop losing land and begin to rebuild. And that figure could be affected by sea level rise. Starting in the 8th century, when Venice's founders dug channels through the lagoon, they would start one and then leave it to see if it filled in naturally. If it did, that meant that the channel wouldn't be sustainable, and they would seek another location. This approach allowed human intervention in the environment while still adapting to nature's constraints. Alberto Vitucci, a Venetian journalist who's been honored for his investigative reports on MOSE, says that the city has lost this attitude.
Ma il vero problema, secondo me, è che in questi ultimi anni si è persa un po' la, come dire, la cultura della laguna.
The real problem, in my mind,
is that the culture of the lagoon has been lost. So we're taking steps like MOES, which maybe one day even the critics will say was necessary. Who knows? But everything else is being overlooked.
Che quando ci sono dei fenomeni si combattano le cause e non soltanto gli effetti come si sta facendo ora.
Vitucci may sound pessimistic, but there are thinkers in the city who are promoting the kind of outlook he says is needed. Carlo Magnani is one of these innovators. An architect from the Venice Institute of Urban Architecture, Magnani is working with colleagues from different countries to promote not only building solutions, but changes in how we think about our environment. At a cafe near Venice's rail station, Magnani says he's interested in new technologies that initiate natural processes instead of blocking them.
One of the 20th century's stupidest forms of presumption was to have harder and harder technologies to superimpose on the world. I think that the big climate events that we're going to be facing demand that we find ways of living with natural events.
Capacità adattativa e di convivenza con i fenomeni naturali.
In New Orleans, other architects are thinking along the same lines. After extensive consultations with their Dutch counterparts, one firm has drafted a design for the city that would create a circulating water system with canals. David Wagoner has been the driving force behind this plan.
The city of New Orleans would look more like a garden city. We talk in the Garden District, but you know, if you imagined a wet, subtropical garden city, you know, with flowing water and frogs croaking at night and less mosquitoes because the frogs eat the mosquitoes, you'd be in a natural city. You'd be in a what the Europeans would say an ecological city. You know, not just a hard man-made city, but you'd have beautiful buildings too, more trees. But with open water.
Wagoner and Reed's proposals are two ideas about how Louisiana can reshape its relationship with the environment, but their implications reach beyond the bayou.
We have places like Shanghai, and we have places like London, and let's not forget Manhattan. And so this is not just a problem for Louisiana. This is not just a problem for Venice. It's a problem for many, many of these mega cities around the world. They all have places that are low-lying next to the water. But the incremental rise of sea level means that in the long run, we're going to have to pay attention. And so the sooner we can learn these lessons, the better.
Reporting from Venice and New Orleans, I'm Zoe Sullivan.
That's it for this edition of Making Contact. Thanks to Gal Holiday and her Honky Tonk Review, and to the Loose Marbles for some of the music you heard in this show. For a CD copy of this program, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736, or check out our website at radioproject.org to get a podcast, download past shows, or make a difference by supporting our work. Like Making Contact on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter. Our handle is making_contact. Lisa Rudman is our executive director, Kyungjin Lee and George Lavender, producers, Irene Flores, web editor, Steph St. Clair, development associate, Lisa Bartfi and Megan Lasala, production interns, and Barbara Barnett, Dan Turner, Alton Bird, Salima Hamarani, and Daisha Moore, volunteers. I'm Andrew Stelzer. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.